Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Saturday, Sunday, the 19th of July, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Lots of Potential. This is the Weekend Special by Jana Wersima. Green Street Realty CEO buys Country Fair Shopping Center for $4.38 million. Plans for the future are still in the early stages. Champaign. When Green Street Realty owner and CEO Chris Saunders first came to Champaign-Urbana as a university student in the 1990s, there was still a movie theater doing business at the Country Fair Shopping Center. A lot has changed since then, and since the center originally opened in the late 1950s. The retailing world especially has changed a lot, Saunders said. Those big box retailers that were in there, maybe they're not out there like they used to be. People are taking smaller retail spaces, and it's just kind of become a little bit obsolete. And obviously, the occupancy's been low out there for quite some time. He estimated that about half of the shopping center, including the outlots, is currently leased, and the other half is vacant. Despite these challenges, Saunders saw a lot of potential at Country Fair, enough to buy the site for over $4.38 million in June, according to county tax records. I believe that the site is underutilized and in need of a refresh, he said, but it is one of the big, busiest trafficked corridors. Saunders' acquisition spans about 36 acres and includes the large L-shaped multi-tenant building at the center of the site and surrounding buildings that house WICD-TV, Ruler Foods, Chase Bank, Thornton's, the former First Federal Savings Bank, and the former Taco Bell. Saunders said that his company is working on a strategy for repositioning the center at some point, which will likely require a multi-year plan. He added that developing underused outlots will likely be easier than coming up with a plan for the main center due to its sheer size. We're careful in leaving our options open right now because we don't want to miss out on somebody that might want a larger space out there, he said. So we're kind of navigating putting together a plan, showing that we're going to be redeveloping this over a period of time. And we really don't know at this point who might have interest in being out there. The previous owner of Country Fair was GMS Management, which put the property up for sale in September of 2022. At the time, Caldwell Banker Commercial Devonshire Realty said it was the first time the shopping center had been listed in over 30 years. The firm's listing noted that the center, which was originally anchored by Goldblatt's department store, includes over 300,000 square feet of retail space. Saunders had initially looked at the property when it went on the market, but the price at that time had been pretty high. Shannon Collins, Chief Acquisitions Officer at Green Street Realtor and CEO of Emerald Partners at GSR, noted that the shopping center had potential due to its high visibility and traffic counts. It just didn't make sense a few years ago, she said. And I think we never really took it off our radar, but then it was presented back to us again, and I think we just knew there was an opportunity to invest there to kind of better serve the community as a whole. Green Street Realty is in the process of looking at how to reposition the site, which includes working with the city and talking to both national and local groups, Collins said. We're also being very sensitive to the tenants that are there, she added. So we've worked as a team to meet with all of them, get feedback from them. We haven't made any decisions yet. There's several leases that have some time left on them, and these will be honored, Saunders said. One of the vacant spaces that Saunders hopes to fill is the former Taco Bell building at 1910 West Springfield Avenue. A renovation permit issued in October of 2024 indicated that there were plans to convert the building into a Jimmy John's, but this never came to pass. Collins' team has listed the space as being available to lease. Under new ownership and professional management, the shopping center has embarked on a strategic improvement initiative focused on property upgrades. Enhanced curb appeal, tenant mix optimization, and long-term reinvestment, a Crexie.com listing for the building states. These planned enhancements are expected to increase shopper traffic, elevate the customer experience, and further reinforce Country Fair's position as a premier West Champaign retail destination. The firm added that Mattis Avenue sees an estimated 22,800 vehicles per day, with Springfield Avenue seeing an estimated 15,300 vehicles per day. So that space is something that Shannon and her team is marketing for us, and we think will be pretty attractive. Just because it's a drive-through building in reasonably good shape, obviously a very busy corner, Saunders said. That is probably one of the first signs out there somebody would see happening. He also plans to demolish the former First Federal Savings Bank building at 1912 West Springfield Avenue and turn the site into its own parcel. We'll either build a building there or put it out for lease for somebody to build a building there, he said. So we'll start transforming the shopping center and breaking it into manageable pieces that can be redeveloped. Collins hopes to find good tenants for Country Fair and will look for both local and national businesses who might be interested, though she noted that improving the center will take time. It's not going to be transformed overnight, that's for sure, she said. I think you'll start to see some of just like the deferred maintenance and those improvements, though, here within the next few months, even if it's a parking lot and lawn care and trash and that type of thing. According to Champaign Economic Development Manager T.J. Blakeman, Country Fair opened in 1959. We're excited to see the property back in local hands, he said. It's always good when we can sit face to face with a property owner and have a conversation about what their plans are. Blakeman previously told the City Council in June of 2024 that the site was under contract to a team of investors led by the Matanke Realty Group and including Shora Sevier LLC of Nevada and Landler LLC of California, who were doing their due diligence before closing. That team walked away from it, Blakeman said, so this is a couple iterations later. He added that the city is optimistic and anxious to hear the owner's plans and figure out how we can be helpful in seeing those come to pass. In January of 2025, the council created the Springfield and Mattis Tax Increment Financing District in the hopes of revitalizing a 217-acre area that includes not only Country Fair, but also the Round Barn Shopping Center, Champaign Park Apartments, and Country Brook Apartments. The TIF works by establishing a district and calculating the current assessed value, the value that the assessor uses to calculate your tax bill for the entire area, the city's website explains. All taxing districts, such as the city, county, school district, and other special districts, continue to collect this amount of tax revenue for the life of the TIF, currently 23 years. Any tax revenue above that base amount, including revenue generated by higher property values caused by new development, goes to a TIF fund to be reinvested into the district. The Springfield and Mattis TIF district was created with the intention that Country Fair would be one of the first properties to be redeveloped, Blakeman said. The sooner we can get this site redeveloped, the healthier the TIF district will be in the out years, which gives the city a tool to then go in and make improvements all across the TIF district, he said. Infrastructure improvements, pedestrian safety enhancements, lighting, working on business attraction and retention in the area. Those things all become possible with the TIF as a tool if we get these projects going early in the life of that TIF. In discussing the possibility of TIF district incentives for the site, Blakeman said the city's approach is to look at a specific project and the potential gaps, opportunities for public improvements, and challenges in getting that plan executed. That's the best place for TIF, if used, to find its purpose, he said. We're going to be working with the city, hand in hand, with our plan, Saunders said. And continuing with Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossall. Thanks to a generous donation from avid hiker Wes Seitz, the Sangamon River Bluff Trail is officially open. The path connecting the Bruce Hannon Levee Trail on the west side of Monticello to Allerton Park, some 4 miles away, has been there for some time. But until an impressive cleanup collaboration, quarterbacked by the Land Conservation Foundation and spurred by Seitz's gift, it was an overgrown mess. It's not like the 6-foot-wide mowed trails at Allerton, Seitz said, but we now have a nice primitive trail. Seitz, a retired professor at the University of Illinois, who at 85 still gets after it, will be among those hiking the trail after today's 9 a.m. ribbon-cutting ceremony at the Levee Trail parking lot. So will LCF Executive Director Eric Mollahan, on the job since October. He was happy to work with Seitz, literally, to clear the Sangamon River Bluff Trail this spring and team with several entities to pull it off. Illinois Department of Natural Resources, Illinois Nature Preserve Commission, Allerton Park, the U of I, and the City of Monticello. It has a rustic feel and unique look for central Illinois, Mollahan said. It's one of the longest stretches of trails along bluffs that we have. Today's hike ends at Allerton's Buck Schroth parking lot, where rides back to the Levee parking lot will be made available. A seasoned marathoner and fired up about the trail's opening, Seitz might just retrace his steps. To see all this come together is great. And in history, area history, in 1926, the Columbian Hotel in Urbana will be remodeled and converted into a modern apartment building with occupancy to start in April. Owner Harry Levinson's plans call for 2 business rooms on the ground floor with a lobby and display windows. The 2 upper floors will contain 5 apartments of 4 rooms each, with bath, refrigerator, and gas for cooking. The Columbian was erected at 207 West Main Street in the 1880s. In its day, it was one of the best hostelries for miles around. But with the arrival of the Urbana Lincoln and McClurg hotels, its business became nil. In 1976, a University of Illinois research team was among the victims of bandit raids that recently have swept the Pacific Coast area along the U.S.-Mexican border. Kenneth Reinhardt, professor of chemistry, said his 5-member expedition was robbed May 29 of about $250 by 5 bandits armed with machetes, a rifle, a pistol, and a scuba spear gun. In 2011, people unable to sell their houses often resort to renting them out, the president of the Champaign County Association of Realtors said. Max Mitchell cites the case of a client who bought a home on South Johnson Avenue in Urbana for $114,900 in 2005. A client listed the house for $99,800 last year when tax credits were available for certain categories of home buyers. It didn't sell. He took it off the market and leased it for a year, Mitchell said. The client decided to test the market again this spring and dropped the price to $98,000. After 92 days, the house remains unsold and the client is seeking another tenant. And continuing with news from our communities, from the Champaign County Court, the article titled, Alleged Shooter with Long Record Held Until Trial. He's accused of opening fire amid argument about stepson's cremation. This article is by Luke Taylor, Urbana. A Champaign man has been charged with attempted murder after allegedly shooting a man over an argument at a family gathering held in remembrance of his late stepson. Kevin Pettis, 54, was arrested Thursday in connection with a May 23rd incident that occurred on the 1200 block of Bradley Avenue, Champaign. Police responded to Pettis' residence at 8:49 p.m. that day and found a 30-year-old victim with a non-threatening injury. Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson said that once on scene, officers learned that a family gathering had been occurring at their residence in honor of Pettis' stepson. Those in attendance were drinking and spending time together, apparently both indoors and out in the front lawn. A witness told police that Pettis and another individual were talking outside, and the topic of the stepson's body potentially being cremated came up. This made Pettis angry, and another individual stepped in to intervene, the witness said. Larson said that Pettis and the person he'd been arguing with each began to move away from one another, but then Pettis turned and approached again. A witness observed him closing in as the other individual backed away before turning to run from Pettis. While he was running away, Larson said Pettis raised a pistol and fired repeatedly at the victim. The witness said he was deliberately aiming and tracking the movements of the victim as he fled, with a shot ultimately striking the victim in the left hip. Pettis' son apparently came and took the gun away from him as another witness went to the injured party to check on him as she called the police. She said as she did this, Pettis told her not to mention his name on the call. She also said that Pettis told the victim, I spared you. Larson said people could be heard in the back of the audio from that 911 call referring to a KP, presumably Kevin Pettis, and that a voice attributed to Pettis could be heard saying, I grazed him. He's alive. Larson said Pettis has an extensive criminal history, including previous weapons offenses as well as violent crimes. Assistant Public Defender Katie Jessup highlighted that Pettis has lived in the community for a long time, has a lot of local family connections, and works two jobs. She said that this specific instance happened during a very emotional time for him, which would not be typical. There would be conditions that could be imposed to prevent further occurrences as he awaited the resolution of his case. Larson, however, said that his history represented someone who should not be released and would likely commit further offenses. If anyone just looks at him funny, he's going to take offense to that, Larson said. He can't control himself. Champaign County Judge Brett Olmstead said that the state had presented enough proof to see Pettis detained ahead of trial, just by the fact that witnesses said there was a gun in his hand. Alongside attempted murder, Pettis was charged with aggravated battery and felon possession of a firearm. All three are Class X felonies. Olmstead said whatever was happening with the argument did not sound like anything justifying boiling over into violence. After reviewing Pettis' record, Olmstead also pointed out that he had served prison time for three other gun-related convictions. He knows full well what holding a gun means, Olmstead said, referring to going to prison. He's at the age where he should have long ago put this behind him. Olmstead ordered that Pettis would be detained until the resolution of his case. He's due back in court in August. And another article on air quality. Haze from distant wildfires chokes off Chicago events. It's by Doug George and Erica Slife, Chicago Tribune. Outdoor concerts, the Great America Theme Park in Gurnee, and other open-air events around Chicago and the suburbs remained on hold midday Friday, as haze from wildfire smoke from Canada and Minnesota stubbornly remained in the area for a second day. Six Flags and Hurricane Harbor in Gurnee announced on its website that it was closed for the day, marking a second day in a row the 50-year-old amusement park was closed due to the poor air quality. Chicago Park District announced Friday morning that Chicago beaches and pools would also remain closed for a second day in a row and that all day camps would be held indoors. The Park District also said Osaka Garden and both the Garfield Park Conservatory and Lincoln Park Conservatory would remain closed for the day. The Forest Preserve District of Will County announced it had canceled its Surf and Turf concert scheduled for Friday night at Monee Reservoir due to predicted hazardous air quality. It also canceled Friday's Kicking It at the Ironworks program at Joliet Ironworks Historic Site. In Aurora, a concert by 80s cover band 16 Candles was canceled in River Edge Park. However, as weather officials expected wildfire smoke to leave northern Illinois sometime Friday afternoon, organizers of other outdoor events were holding their breath on cancellations. Continuing with the weekend special, we have an article titled Seeking a Second Helping, the former McCabe Brothers Tool Rental. Family behind Breaking Taco, which started as a food truck, plans to set up commissary kitchen so others can do the same. This article is by Jana Wersema. Champagne. When Luis Salgado's family initially founded their business, Breaking Taco, they bought a food truck but found themselves in need of additional space for meal prep. Salgado's mother couldn't find a commissary kitchen that they could use, and the restaurants the family reached out to didn't have enough space to share. So that's why we decided to open the restaurant in Mahomet, because we couldn't find a commissary kitchen, Soldago said. So it ended up working out better for us. The family has since closed their food truck, but now the shoe is on the other foot, with mobile operators asking if they can use the kitchen at Breaking Taco. In light of that demand, Salgado is looking to convert a commercial building at 411 North Wright Street in Champaign into a commissary kitchen. It's his hope that the facility could be ready to go in January or February of 2027, pending the necessary approvals from local officials. We want to create a space for people that need the opportunity to start their own business, just like my family did, he said. The Salgado family bought the property in early 2024, according to county tax records. It was previously home to McCabe Brothers Tool Rental. Salgado said that his family, which owns a roofing company, in addition to Breaking Taco, bought the Wright Street site because we knew that we could use a commercial space down the road. The vision is that members of the commissary kitchen will be able to use the site to do meal prep and store supplies, he said. Salgado plans to create two stations so that the facility can be used by two businesses at a time. According to Sarah Michaels, Environmental Health Director at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, there are 87 food trucks doing business in the health district's jurisdiction. Before businesses can get cooking at Salgado's facility, however, the site will require various renovations. These include electrical work, plumbing upgrades, installing kitchen equipment, expanding the size of the bathroom, and replacing the roof, he said. Additionally, Salgado is seeking a special use permit from the city to allow the commissary kitchen use, as the subject property is located in a district zoned as multifamily medium density. City Planning Manager Jeff Marino estimated that the tool rental business that had been located at the site since the late 1950s or early 1960s. I thought it'd be nice to run another family business in the area. Kind of like keep their legacy, Saldago said. Marino wrote in a report to the Plan Commission that the existing building has been a non-conforming land use since 1965. Due to the location, it is economically impractical to tear down the existing structure and rebuild a multifamily structure, he said. Without the special use permit, the structure will sit vacant for the foreseeable future. The existing site also lends itself to the loading and unloading of vehicles in the rear of the site, which reduces the impact of noise on the adjacent properties. He noted that the site will not have any walk-in customers and that use of the facilities will be by appointment, which should minimize traffic impacts. Planning staff have recommended approval of the permit with conditions, including that hours of operation must be limited to 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. and that no carryout would be allowed on site. There cannot be any on-site sales, Salgado confirmed. He noted in his permit application that the proposed facility could be used by caterers as well as food truck operators. We will design the interior space with features that will improve its performance and safety, improve the exterior look of the building to contribute to a better visual quality of the area, and keep clear and safe access to the site, he added. New lighting is also planned. The Plan Commission voted on July 1 to recommend approval with conditions to the City Council in a 4-3 vote. In addition to the staff recommendations, Commissioner Donald Elmore's motion included an additional condition that amplified music must be prohibited between the hours of 8 p.m. and 7 a.m. 7 days a week. The case is on the agenda for the Council's Monday meeting. During the time for public comment at the Plan Commission meeting, a few neighboring property owners and residents expressed concerns about issues such as odors, traffic, noise, and the site's proximity to residential neighborhoods. Individuals also felt that there had been a lack of communication with the surrounding community about the proposal. There was a signed petition opposing the proposed special use permit with 28 individual signatures, Marino wrote in a report to the council. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Saturday, Sunday, July 19th, 2026. Please stay tuned.